Continuing. The American newspaper man Theodore Kagan, K-A-G-H-A-N, who interviewed the chancellor at that time, described Forsbach's nervousness when Nazism was discussed in the interview. Forsbach felt uneasy because it had been revealed in the German press that he, quote, had played a leading role back in 1933 by lining up German Catholic student organizations behind Hitler, unquote. He had also appeared in the first complete Nazi Reichstag, quote, wearing a smart SA uniform and looking resplendent in the ideological trappings of the thousand-year Reich, unquote. Now, Theodore Kagan, again, an American newspaperman, of his observations of what is going on in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany, this again in the 1950s. Kagan, who served for several years as a high public affairs official with the U.S. High Commissioner in Germany, had first-hand knowledge of the conditions in the Bonn Republic. In his articles, he described how even those friendly toward Adenauer say that the Chancellor is, quote, too closely surrounded with ex-Nazis, unquote. Kagan quoted Der Mittag, M-I-T-T-A-G, a right-of-center newspaper, as saying, quote, we simply cannot understand why former prominent Nazi politicians must be in the first row again. There is no excuse, unquote. Well, there may not be an excuse, but there sure as bloody hell is an explanation. Continuing, of the second cabinet of the, quote, new, unquote, Germany formed by Adenauer, Tettens writes as follows. When Chancellor Adenauer formed his second cabinet after the 1953 election, it was presented to the world as a team of staunch Democrats. However, the record showed a number of his ministers either as members of the Nazi Party and the SS, or as extreme nationalists who had served the Hitler cause in important positions. Ministers Theodor Oberländer, Emanuel Preusker, and Waldemar Kraft had been officers in Hitler's elite guard. Interrupting by Hitler's elite guard, they're referring to the SS. Spellings, Theodor Oberländer, T-H-E-O-D-O-R, O-B-E-R-L-A-E-N-D-E-R, Emanuel Preusker, P-R-E-U-S-K-E-R, and Kraft is K-R-A-F-T, Gerhard Schroeder, S-C-H-R-O-E-D-E-R. Oh, excuse me. Beginning again with, or resuming, I should say, with Tetten's text. Dr. Gerhard Schroeder, a party member, served the Nazis as a legal advisor and stormtroop leader. As Minister of the Interior, he now has control over the police and is responsible for the internal security of the Bonn Republic. Former New York Times correspondent Delbert Clark, C-L-A-R-K, reported that the record of the Minister of Economics, Dr. Ludwig Erhard, E-R-H-A-R-D, quote, was one of full cooperation with the Nazi regime, unquote. He was, again quoting, advisor to Nazi Gauleiter Birkel in the Saar and chief of the Hitlerite Institute for Industrial Research, unquote. Birkel, by the way, B-U-E-R-C-K-E-L. Now, take note of Adenauer's Minister of Economics, Dr. Ludwig Erhard, and note his record, quote, was one of full cooperation with the Nazi regime, unquote. He was, again quoting, advisor to Nazi Gauleiter Birkel in the Saar and chief of the Hitlerite Institute for Industrial Research, unquote. Now, I'm emphasizing Minister of Economics Dr. Ludwig Erhard because when Adenauer stepped down as Chancellor, he was succeeded by Dr. Ludwig Erhard. And when Erhard stepped down, he was succeeded by Kurt Kiesinger, K-I-E-S-I-N-G-E-R, one of the key officials in Goebbels' radio propaganda ministry, or in the radio propaganda branch of Goebbels' propaganda ministry. Recall that the man who served as president while Kiesinger was serving as chancellor was Dr. Heinrich Lübke, not Hans Globke, but Dr. Heinrich Lübke, L-U-B-K-E, who had been in charge of approving the blueprints for all of the concentration camps. If you like what you've seen so far, stick around. There's more. Read 'em and weep, baby. Read 'em and weep. Continuing with Tetten's text. Dr. Fritz Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, the Minister of Finance, later Minister of Justice, praised Hitler in glowing terms as the, quote, savior of the Reich, unquote. Delbert Clark described Schaefer as, quote, a clever and highly dangerous character, unquote. Under United States occupation, Schaefer was appointed Minister President of Bavaria. However, mounting evidence soon revealed that he had been a Nazi collaborator and in 1946 he was removed from office and banned for several years from all political activities. However, he later, of course, as noted here by Tettens, became a Minister of Finance and a Minister of Justice. Next, we're going to take a look at the Minister of Transportation and the Ministry of Transportation. The Minister of Transportation, Dr. Hans Christoph Sebohm, S-E-E-B-O-H-M, served the Nazi regime as an economic advisor in Silesia and in occupied Czechoslovakia. Dr. Sebohm is known all over Europe as an ultra-nationalistic troublemaker. Der Spiegel of March 23, 1960, published a two-column profile which depicted Sebohm as the, quote, prototype of the eternal Nazi, unquote. His rabble-rousing Sunday speeches have become a controversial topic in the European press and have frequently been a source of uneasiness to Dr. Adenauer. As leader of the rightist German party, Dr. Sebohm has openly expressed his deep reverence for the swastika and has viciously attacked the Western powers. On September 15, 1951, he addressed a mass meeting of the Sudeten Germans at Stuttgart in which he denounced the, quote, monstrous crime the victors had committed against Germany, Europe, and the whole world, unquote. This is the Minister of Transportation here. And there's more. Another cabinet member, Dr. Hermann Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-R. Now, that's not Dr. Fritz Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, the Minister of Finance and Minister of Justice. This is a different Schaefer, but again, same string, different yo-yo. Another cabinet member, Dr. Hermann Schaefer, served during the war as an important official in Reichsmarschall Goering's armaments office. Next, we're going to take a look at an individual we have already touched on in Radio Free America 37 in connection with his participation in the International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, a German-based intelligence network whose Texas representative was Nelson Bunker Hunt. This individual also very close to Gerhard Frey of the Deutsche National Zeitung and Soldaten Zeitung that we're going to return to next week. This is Dr. Theodor Oberlander, as we looked at in Radio Free America number 14. He served as the liaison officer between the Galen Organization in its World War II incarnation of Fremde Heere Ost and the Vlasov Liberation Army, a key formulator of Third Reich policy towards the occupied territories in the East. He later on became Minister of Ex-Palais, was forced to resign after disclosures of his participation in war crimes. He then became a key participant in the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and later in the World Anti-Communist League. We're going to return to him again next week in a big way. We'll be resuming with Tettens text. Of all his cabinet members, the Minister for Ex-Palais, Dr. Theodor Oberlander, caused the Chancellor most chagrin. As a high Nazi official and officer of the SS, he was Reichsfuhrer of the German alliance in the East, Dr. Oberlander had used the Nazi press to demand the expulsion and extermination of the Slavic peoples and the rapid colonization of the vast conquered territories by the German master race. For years, German Democratic papers had charged Dr. Oberlander with packing the ranks of his ministry with former Nazis. In 1959, Oberlander was the center of a storm that finally forced his resignation in May of 1960. He was blamed for the mass murder of thousands of Jews and Polish intellectuals who had been liquidated in July of 1941 when a special SS task force under his command occupied the Polish city of Lemberg, or Lvov, L-V-O-V. By the way, this city was called Lemberg when it was under Polish jurisdiction. Later on, after the Hitler-Stalin Pact, it became part of the Ukraine, which it is to this day. Then it was renamed Lvov. And in a footnote to this passage, the passage I just read, T.H. Tettens adds, at that time, Dr. Oberlander was an SS officer and a member of the notorious Abwehr. According to Die Zeit of Hamburg, he was an expert, quote, for the treatment of other races, unquote, and the political officer of the Einsatz Terror Nachtigall Unit. That's N-A-C-H-T-I-G-A-L-L. Oberlander's unit entered Lemberg on June 30th and remained in the city 6 days. According to Reitlinger and other sources, 7,000 people were killed, chiefly between July 2nd and 4th. Oberlander does not deny that he was in Lemberg in those days, but says that during his stay, quote, not a single shot was fired. That from Die Zeit of October 9th, 1959. As we're going to look at next week, Oberlander was acquitted of war crimes charges because all of the witnesses brought to testify on his behalf were members of the OUNB group of Stefan Bandera, whose members had been the OUN, I should say, whose members had comprised most of the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall, or Nightingale, the unit that Oberländer commanded and that committed the Lvov or Lemberg massacre. Now, what we're going to look at next is the presence of former high-ranking Nazis in the ministries themselves. We've taken a look at many of the key ministers, and as T.H. Tetten's notes here, it should come as no surprise that the ministries themselves under these people were packed with Nazis. Continuing, with a cabinet of such background, it comes as no surprise to hear that the ministries are studded with former high-ranking Nazis. The excuse has often been heard that qualified applicants with a solid democratic record were not available. This has been vehemently denied by democratic critics. In the case of the Foreign Office, there was a list of more than 1,000 applicants, men of democratic principles with diplomatic and foreign language experience. Dr. Blankenhorn chose to hire his old Ribbentrop associates. The Ministry for Expellees, once headed by Oberländer, is still known as a haven for former high-ranking Nazis. The personal assistant to the minister is today Dr. Wolfram, W-O-L-F-R-A-M, a former SS officer. The fanatical race propagandist Werner Wenski, ex-mayor of Lodz, serves as director of a department. Head of the press office, Dr. Schlicker, was a stormtroop leader. By the way, Werner Wenski, V-E-N-T-Z-K-I. Schlicker is S-C-H-L-I-C-K-E-R. Next, we're going to take a look at people in the Ministry of Transportation under Dr. Hans Sebohm, discussed above. Many ex-Nazis have found shelter in the Ministry of Transportation under Dr. Hans Sebohm. One of his department chiefs is Werner Kreipe, owner of the Nazi Blutorden, or Order of the Blood, the highest Nazi party decoration, who once served as chief of the general staff in Goering's Luftwaffe. Kreipe is K-R-E-I-P-E, Blutorden, B-L-U-T-O-R-D-E-N. The senior civil servant in the Interior Ministry is State Secretary Ritter von Lex, a former Nazi and intimate friend of Dr. Globke. The Deutsche Zeitung of April 22, 1959, pointed out that it had become a habit of senior officials to bring into their department scores of officials who had worked with them during the Hitler regime. Resuming again, the Deutsche Zeitung of April 22, 1959, pointed out that it had become a habit of senior officials to bring into their department scores of officials who had worked with them during the Hitler regime. For many years, the Ministry of Justice has drawn criticism in the Bundestag. The courts, with a few notable exceptions, are to a large extent run by former Nazis. It has been charged that hundreds of Hitler's court functionaries are today in important positions as prosecutors and presiding judges. Miscarriages of justice and favoritism toward ex-Nazis have become so routine that it is necessary to review this situation in a special chapter. And I would interrupt to note that we're going to go into the reinstitution of the Nazi judiciary and the consequent reinstitution of Third Reich convictions, and also the reinstitution of a number of key legal statutes from the Third Reich and their incorporation into the legal code of the, quote, new, unquote, Germany. Next, we're going to take a look at the new German Wehrmacht. New again belongs in quotes. We're going to go into this at considerable length next week. The new German Wehrmacht was directed by the young, aggressive, Christian Democratic politician Franz Josef Strauss, S-T-R-A-U-S-S, whom Time magazine once labeled, quote, the man to watch, unquote. The British press has called Strauss, quote, the most dangerous man in Europe, unquote. The senior civil servant in the Defense Ministry is State Secretary Dr. Josef Rust, R-U-S-T, a former colleague and intimate of Globke. Die Welt of Hamburg reported on September 8, 1956, that, quote, of 38 newly appointed generals in the Bundeswehr, 31 were members of the general staff of the old Wehrmacht, unquote. These are the same generals who served under the banner of the swastika and whose, quote, responsibility for Hitler's rule is so heavy and so unmistakable, unquote. The British correspondent Brian Connell, C-O-N-N-E-L-L, has reported that, quote, most of the leading members of the new German Defense Ministry were recommended to Adenauer by General Galen, unquote. And we're going to come back to the pivotal role of the Galen organization in the reformation of the German General Staff from World War II next week. If you like what you've seen so far, again, stick around. There's more. Read 'em and weep, baby. Read 'em and weep. There are active Nazi conspirators in the Ministry of All German Affairs, which some years ago was instrumental in organizing a Nazi-type movement in the Saar in order to bring this French-controlled territory, Heims ins Reich, H-E-I-M-S-I-N-S-R-E-I-C-H, home to the Reich. The outright Nazi character of this pan-German organization was clearly revealed when Der Spiegel published the record of the ex-Nazi official Dr. Eberhard Taubert, T-A-U-B-E-R-T, who in 1955 attracted attention with his anti-Semitic statements. Another early Nazi fighter and anti-Semite is Dr. Theodor Sonnemann, S-O-N-N-E-M-A-N-N, who served the Hitler regime as an ideological propagandist for total war in the German high command. In several books, Dr. Sonnemann denounced the British as the, quote, arch-enemy, unquote, and the Jews as the inventors of lies in the atrocity propaganda against the Third Reich. His books were acclaimed in the Nazi press. Today, this friend of Dr. Globke serves as State Secretary for Agriculture in the Adenauer government. I'm pausing here for a minute. Now, the name of Dr. Eberhard Taubert, a key official in Goebbels' propaganda ministry, is one we've seen before. He, along with Fritz Kramer, C-R-A-M-E-R, a former Abwehr officer in Lisbon and Riga during World War II, were involved with the VFF organization, basically a private intelligence organization to keep subversives out of employment in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany. Both of those two Kramer along with Alfred Gielen, G-I-E-L-E-N, who during World War II published through the Nibelungen House under Dr. Eberhard Taubert, both Kramer and Gielen became key participants in the WACCFL, the World Anti-Communist Congress for Freedom and Liberation, along with people like Dr. Theodor Oberlander, that metamorphosed into the World Anti-Communist League, and the WACCFL is something we looked at considerable length in our discussion from Peter Dale Scott's The Dallas Conspiracy vis-a-vis the Kennedy assassination, or the institutions that figure in the background of the Kennedy assassination. By the way, recall the fellow who was running the defense ministry under Adenauer, Franz Josef Strauss, the director of the new, quote, new, unquote, German Wehrmacht. Recall that Paul Weyrich of the Free Congress Foundation, itself very close to the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, was an individual who frequently read speeches by Franz Josef Strauss into the American congressional record. We're going to touch back on that later on in the broadcast. I should say we touched on that in the broadcast done on September 6th of 1992. Now, we're going to take a look at a fellow now named Dr. Gustav A. Sonnenohl, S-O-N-N-E-N-O-H-L. This individual became a key functionary in the Adenauer cabinet. He also became the head of the Information Office for Marshall Plan Aid in the Adenauer administration. And take a look at the views that this guy expresses. One of the things he emphasized was a memorandum advocating that Germany exploit the Cold War to the maximum extent possible and see to it that no agreement could ever be reached between the Soviet Union and the United States. Of Dr. Sonnenohl. Now, this is very, very important because, again, I can appreciate that I might seem to be ranging a little bit afar for a lot of people, but the events we're talking about here and have been talking about since July 26 are the events underlying all of the contemporary political realities. That's why I'm going into it at this length and this depth. But take a look at a stated Third Reich policy, and we're going to see how this dovetails with what Galen and Admiral von Dönitz, who succeeded Hitler, were looking at before the end of World War II. Take a look at this viewpoint being expressed by an Adenauer minister in 1951. Recall that in 1950, the Madrid circular letter of the Nazi Party in exile was assessing the possibilities for a German comeback. And here, an Adenauer official and the head of the Information Office for Marshall Plan Aid in the Adenauer administration is basically advocating that Germany see to it that no rapprochement between the U.S. and Soviet bloc could ever be achieved. Recall the role of the Galen Organization in effecting exactly that, and recall what happened to people like President Eisenhower with the U-2 incident, and people like President Kennedy with his attempts at moderating the Cold War. One was sabotaged, the other killed, and we have seen the role of some of these same Third Reich alumni and related organizations in the killing of John Kennedy. Resuming now with reading from T.H. Tetten's The New Germany and the Old Nazis. Dr. Gustav A. Sonnenau, who joined Hitler's brown shirts and the Nazi Party as early as 1930, had a similar career. Later, Dr. Sonnenau became an SS officer attached to von Ribbentrop's diplomatic staff. According to the Frankfurter Rundschau of November 22, 1951, Dr. Sonnenau boasted after the war that, quote, "it had been an honor to have served as a member of Hitler's SS," unquote. This Nazi record was no hindrance to the old fighter, who in 1950 was appointed head of the information office for Marshall Plan Aid in the Adenauer administration. A few years later, Dr. Sonnenau became the senior advisor to Vice Chancellor Blücher in the second Adenauer cabinet, Vice Chancellor, the equivalent of Vice President. Continuing, while in this position, he wrote a memorandum in which he advocated that Germany exploit the Cold War to the utmost and make sure that no agreement should be reached between the United States and the Soviet bloc. Last sentence again, or last two sentences. A few years later, and this guy again, a former SS man, a few years later, Dr. Sonnenau became the senior advisor to Vice Chancellor Blücher in the second Adenauer cabinet. While in this position, he wrote a memorandum in which he advocated that Germany exploit the Cold War to the utmost and make sure that no agreement should be reached between the United States and the Soviet bloc. According to the Hamburger Echo of March 27, 1954, the Sonnenau memorandum aroused much criticism in England. Continuing, even in the highest office of the land, that of the president, Nazis occupy positions of trust. The administrative head of the presidential office is a former Nazi official, Dr. Manfred Kleiber, and his right-hand assistant is ex-consul Leopold Wirtz, who once belonged to the SS Security Division. By the way, that's the Sicherheitsdienst, the SS Intelligence Service. Spellings, Dr. Manfred Kleiber, K-L-A-I-B-E-R, and Leopold Wirtz, L-U-I-P-O-L-D-W-E-R-Z, again a former Sicherheitsdienst member. Continuing, the conditions in the administration of the Länder, L-A-E-N-D-E-R, county districts, and municipalities are even worse. In many of the smaller towns, the old Nazi burgomasters have been re-elected. In industry and banking, the ex-Nazi Wirtschaftsführer are back in power and position. By the way, we took a look at the reinstitution of the corporate and financial structure of the Third Reich in Radio Free America number 2 from May of 1984, and Uncle Sam and the Swastika from May of 1980, some of that reprised in an earlier installment done 2 weeks ago of RFA 37. Enumerating some of the Nazi industrialists and bankers put back into power and business. And recall that this is critical for our understanding. We've covered it before, because the economic and corporate life have an incalculable effect on the political life, which in turn is inextricably linked with the national security establishment. And this should not be forgotten as we examine the other aspects of the reconstituted Reich. In industry and banking, the ex-Nazi Wirtschaftsführer, Wirtschaftsführer, are back in power and position. The Krupps, Flicks, Reichsbergs, and Reimsmas have rebuilt and expanded their empires, and the Nazi banker Hermann Abs has greater influence with Dr. Adenauer than he ever had under Adolf Hitler. Flick is F-L-I-C-K, Reichsberg, R-E-C-H-S-B-E-R-G, Reimsma, R-E-E-M-T-S-M-A-S. Now, of course, we've looked at Hermann Abs, A-B-S, before. He was head of the Deutsche Bank and a key Nazi banker. He put forth the venture capital to build the slave labor camps around Auschwitz, was a director of the IG Farben chemical cartel, and was called in by Pope John Paul II to help straighten out the Vatican financial mess and the Vatican bank situation in the early 1980s. Now, the last section of this particular chapter of T.H. Tetten's The New Germany and the Old Nazis touches directly on why this material will appear so new and so shocking, and perhaps to many people like Buck Rogers' stuff, as that American character in the radio play German High Command referred to the statements by the Nazi character played by Paul Lucas that the Third Reich would come back. Note here again that as T.H. Tetten's details in a chapter called The Other Germany, there are democratic elements in Germany, and there are many thoughtful, mature, and conscientious Germans who oppose this kind of thing. But T.H. Settens was not optimistic about their ability to prevail due to the institutions that were being controlled by the Third Reich, and due to the fact that, as he points out, most of the people in Germany would probably remain apathetic, politically apathetic, and concerned with their own personal, economic, and physical well-being. Adenauer writes, Freudian slip, T.H. Tetten's writes, that the Nazis have had a successful comeback in the Bonn Republic has been admitted even in the German press. Unfortunately, however, the general public in those countries which have aided in Germany's post-war recovery are shockingly unaware that the men who once faithfully served Hitler have quietly returned to key positions in the government. And again, note the basic principle, a fundamental principle of Radio Free America 37, anti-communism as a vehicle for conquest. And note Dr. Gustav A. Sonnenol, former SS officer, information, head of the information office for Marshall Plan Aid under Adenauer, advocating that Germany exploit the Cold War to the utmost and make sure that no agreement could be reached between the United States and the Soviet bloc. Again, it was vital from a propaganda standpoint that the American people and other people in the NATO countries, recall the Christian West concept, Third Reich survival concept underlying NATO, that people in the other NATO countries not be aware that for all practical political purposes and national security purposes, the Reich had been reconstituted, because from a propaganda standpoint, during the Cold War, it became vital to emphasize that the new Germany was democratic, in contrast with the totalitarian Stalinist regime of East Germany. And again, I want to reiterate that I have in no brief for that type of government. But on the other hand, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And as totalitarian as the former East Germany was, the West Germany that ultimately absorbed it has some very serious blots on its record as well. But again, notes the Hitler principle, the bigger the lie is, the more readily it will be believed. And what was cited by Paul Lucas, the Nazi character in the radio play High Command from 1944, the more unpleasant the truth, the less likely Americans are to believe it. And note that the German public was more aware of the events that I've been describing here than the American public. And again, note that in this period, in the 1950s and early 60s, this book published in 61, this is the period in which liberation theory was being introduced into American society. That, again, a Third Reich psychological and political warfare tactic, which ultimately became a key element of American strategic operations during the Cold War and later a dominant element in American political thinking. It had its triumph with Kennedy's assassination, its fulfillment under the Reagan and Bush administrations, when it was being introduced as a major element of American strategic and political thinking in the 50s. It was being introduced by elements of the organizations of the CIA, such as the Crusade for Freedom, and the thinking and many of the key participants of the Galen organization were being projected into American political life at this time, then again evolving up through the succeeding years through organizations such as the Republican Heritage Groups Council, and ultimately these same groups that we find being recapitulated in many areas of the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, triumphant in others, triumphant in the Ukraine, triumphant in Lithuania, triumphant in Croatia, and reemergent in various places ranging from Romania to Hungary, organizations like the Iron Guard, the Ustashi, the Arrow Cross, the OUNB, the Sejudis organization representing the Savandarii, all of these groups are coming back. Some of them are dominant in that part of the world, and it remains to be seen what a possible economic crisis in the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe might, what effect that might have on the possible dominance of many of these groups. Whatever happens, again, as I noted in an earlier chapter, the map of Europe, Eastern Europe, has been redrawn along precisely the lines that Alfred Rosenberg's Ostministerium of the Third Reich would have liked. The former Soviet Union has been fragmented into its constituent ethnic republics. The Croatia is now a separate country under Franjo Tudjman, who denies the Holocaust happened. Slovakia has broken off from Czechoslovakia. It was an independent country under Reverend Josef Tiso, under the Third Reich, and the World Slovak Congress, recapitulating the collaborationist Linka Party, HLINKA, became a key element of the World Anti-Communist League. And again, this was as a result of the introduction and triumph of rollback or liberation theory in fighting the Cold War, originally from the Third Reich to the United States and having its ultimate manifestation in the Reagan years. And I'm looking at this here this evening by way of understanding what was going on in the Germany that controlled the Gehlen organization during this same historical period. We're going to take a musical break, and then we're going to come back with an examination of the reinstitution of the Third Reich Civil Service and the exclusion from the Third Reich Civil Service of all of those who had been excluded from the New Germany Civil Service of all of those who had been excluded for racial reasons in the Third Reich's Civil Service. So if you like what you've seen so far, stick around. There's more. Read 'em and weep, baby. Read 'em and weep.